Welcome back to the NFL Player Podcast. Logan Ryan here again, and got a great guest today. A lot of energy. Hates playing in cold weather. Refuses to play for the team in cold weather. Luckily, he doesn't. Has had a great Hall of Fame career. Talks about where he came up with his first sack dance. Talks about all the energy that he brings and all the great things he does off the field as well. A fellow and another Walter Payton Man of the Year candidate, Cameron Cam Jordan. And I think he is. I think he's my vote for the Walter Payton Man of the Year this year. And I'm a nominee, but I think he's a front runner. And I might be. I'm going for the underdog card. I'm trying to get the underdog fan vote. So what's going on, my man?
Man, look, appreciate you having me on. I don't know if I'm a fan favorite. I don't know if I'm a front runner for anything other than tackles and sacks. Look, when it comes to the Walter Payton Man of the Year award, there's so many phenomenal guys between you, Cam Hayward, Tyrann Mathews, Justin Simmons, Dak Prescott. I mean, it's beyond the names. It's the work that we're doing. I think the WPMOY is phenomenal for highlighting guys who are in the communities, highlighting guys who are always giving it valiant efforts of trying to better not only themselves, but people around them. And honestly, you know, sure, there has to be a winner, but even just being nominated puts a light on what you're doing. It brings attention to exactly what you've been doing unannounced or uninvited to be doing in your surrounding communities. So, I mean, you know, kudos to you. Congrats to you for being even up for the nomination. I think it's a phenomenal situation to be nominated. Would it be great to win? Sure, because that's more money that I'd be able to use to better, what, three or four different initiatives that I have a little heartfelt situation for. But in terms of is it going to stop me from giving, or is it going to deter me if I don't win? That's not going to deter from any of the work that we've done. We take it. It just means one or two extra cameras are around, but we still got work to do. And whether the money comes from, you know, the NFL or from our own pockets or from anybody who's donated, and it's all about the positive vibes and the positive efforts that we've been given to this point.
I can relate, because all the people who've been nominated to this, guys who've been doing work, they get the attention, or sometimes you do or don't, you know, and it's not what you're seeking. It's not what you're seeking. You know, it's almost like it feels weird trying to promote yourself for your own charity work. You know, you let the work speak for yourself. And like, you know, my cause is animal welfare, is something I do. It started with my wife. And I know you do stuff with police, and we'll talk about it as well. But police reform and police training that I'm working with, that's something I did with my father, who's a 25-year police officer. So I wasn't seeking any type of, oh, I hope I win the world. I'm going to win it with this one. It's just kind of what I was doing, stuff close to my heart. And then, you know, you kind of get that nominee, and you realize that is like harder to get than the Pro Bowl. That's harder to get than other things, because so many people and how you judge one man's work from another. And I know you've been here. What is this, your fourth nominee?
No, it's a second nomination. Yeah, man. I mean, that's just it. You know, been in the community 11 years, been nominated officially twice now.
Right.
And sure, you could be like, man, I could get nominated every year, but there's so many teammates, there's so many people in this world trying to create positive waves. I mean, you know, my team alone, you've got, you know, Malcolm Jenkins, who's done phenomenal work on and off the field. DeMario Davis has done tremendous work.
Right.
We've got guys like Teron Armstead, who just opened up a community center. I think on each and everybody's individual teams, there's three or four guys that, you know, put in overtime work. And it's really that kind of positivity that makes you want to be even more involved in the community. But I'm looking over like, damn, I'm not doing enough. Like, I feel like, man, I'm just doing school visits, or I'm just doing this initiative, or I'm just teaming up with Crescent City Corps, or, you know, trying to affect the community with the Hurricane Ida aftermath. But it's like, you look over, and so are your teammates. You look over and you're like, man, he's doing, you know, my teammate Double D has his Dreamers Foundation, where, you know, he's got these 7-on-7 kids. So he's out there tutelaging the next generation. You know, he's out there pushing. He's pushing for greatness. And I'm like, man, I've got a couple mentees that I'm out here trying to help, but I feel like I can do more. Like, he's teaching football and real life situations. I'm like, he's Coach Prime over there. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm just helping out with like, hey, man, how's your grades? I'm like, what you want, man? Like, football is not just the only answer. You can be more than that. It's like, you know, you team up with Crescent City Corps, and it's this additional training. I mean, it's bringing actual community leaders in. It's bringing actual people in. And it's giving that heartfelt message. It's opening up the minds of the policing entity that's supposed to be properly policing the community surrounding it. But it's just the efforts given, man. I mean, you know what it is. Like, if you're not giving your whole heart, then you're just giving money. I mean, you're just You can give money all you want, but it's the time, it's the effort, it's the heart being in it that actually pushes for a positive change.
Yeah, that makes a lasting impact. And that's the biggest thing is like, you know, when they asked me to do this podcast, I wanted to highlight players around the league that I felt were real, really doing this. I wanted to pull the curtain back for the fans and the viewers and the listeners to see that we're human beings behind here. And the guys are really trying to compete. Like, your locker room is filled with great dudes. Demario Davis, known great dude. Malcolm Jenkins, great dude. Wherever franchise they go to, you know, they're touching that franchise and doing great things. And I believe that certain individuals attack greatness in everything they do. You can't just turn it on, right? You can't just say, I'm gonna make these sacks on the field, and then off the field, I'm just gonna have somebody pick a foundation and just throw the money there. No, you're really doing work. And I think what me and you have in common is the police reform work. So obviously I know what made you kind of start that, but when you saw the George Floyd incident, and when did it, I always say I started mine because I didn't just want to tweet. I felt like I just felt like that wasn't the whole battle. I wasn't going to finish the job by that. I wasn't going to make the real impact by just driving the tweet wave. So what made you spark that chain and say, I want to partner with this 501c3?
Man, you could say Ahmaud Arbery, you could say George Floyd. But really it becomes very like reflective upon all the times you've been pulled over, right? Like, yeah. I went to school, whatever it was, Arizona, California, New Orleans, wherever I've lived, like I've been pulled over, and 9 times out of 10, I'm probably stepping out the vehicle. You feel me? Like, I hope it's because I'm 6'4", 285 pounds, off season, probably 290, you know, like I'm a rather large individual. I'm sure they, you know, to clear some space, hey man, step out the car. But that's always been the case. But one of these times it could go wrong. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, one of these times it could be a routine stop, and you see something like that, it's like, man, that could be me. And it hits even harder when you have a son and you're like, damn, my son could be involved in that. There's just, it hits home when you see somebody who looks like you, somebody who could be a part of your family, somebody who could, who sort of feels like a representative of what you could be in that position. Tweeting about it may put a flashlight on it. Throwing it on IG story may get a couple more views than, you know, a couple more eyes on the scene. But where's the act of change? If all I'm doing is tweeting about it, I feel like all I'm doing is venting. And you know, it goes to that saying, like, put your money where your mouth is. Like, what else can I do? Like, bro, I could be like, hey, check this out. But that's not helping anybody. You know, that's not actually creating for a change. So it just became a vetting process. Like, bro, how do I really get some sort of forward process? I feel like I could throw money at it and say that it's going to be reformed, but I'm like, how do I actually affect change? How do I go ahead and say, hey, I see a problem. How do I go about fixing it? So like, we get to Crescent City Corps, and they're like, hey, we've already had our first cohort. 15 to 16 officers have already been through this. This is how it's affected them. And bro, you see the change of the first dialogue that they had, like their first meeting, to, you know, the like eighth course in, the 12th course in, that final graduation, I guess you would say, and the way that they're addressing how they have different police stops. That's what affected me.
No, I mean, that makes sense, because honestly, this community you live in, community, your kids want to grow, and you want to make the community a better place than when you got there. And really, you're just kind of figuring out where you see fit and how that change needs to happen. And really, I'm sitting on the back porch of my house in Florida, and I'm with my dad. My dad is a police officer, 25 years, FBI agent, SWAT team, martial artist, and four different black belts. It's extremely lethal human being walking through looking like a regular dude that you don't want to mess with. And then you square up and he like kicks you in the chin. You're like, hold on, this ain't someone I want to fight with. But you don't know that. And he's sitting back here, and he's a retired cop in Camden, New Jersey, homicide detective, very, very violent city where I was born. And you see him and a lot of cops and good cops and minority cops or whatever getting a real bad rap. Right. It's kind of the one bad apples. And I'm kind of sitting there as an athlete tweeting about police reform and the changes that we need. But at the same time, I'm the son of a police officer. I said, let me just talk to him. Let me see what I'm missing. And he said, son, the biggest thing is the police have a tough job. Obviously, they're undertrained and they're going to situations undertrained, and they're not confident. And when you're not confident, you act scared, you react scared, you go to your basic primal instincts or wherever that may be. So just like a football player, just like an athlete, more training. The more training you have, the more calm and collected you may be. Of course, we got to change idealistic racial, systemic racism and stuff that has been going on for decades and hundreds of years, well beyond us, and how our country is set up infrastructure-wise. But it comes down to their training, it comes down to those de-escalation techniques, those interactions of at police stops, how to properly cuff, how to defend yourself. Obviously, if you're a confident human being who's done martial arts, you're really comfortable defending yourself. You know, you're not going to relate to lethal force so quick. Kind of listening to that side from a police officer, listening to the side as a Black man growing up in America, I try to build a bridge and start a company with my dad and all a majority minority police officers, all retired, to go around and train different police departments on how to properly de-escalate, like you talk about, using your voice at stops and the proper things to say and kind of those rules and regulations. And then if it does get to that point, minimum force restraint, not lethal force, obviously. So I started that company called RAST, trying to highlight, you know, trying to be that bridge in the middle, trying to highlight those good police officers, though. I didn't want to give up and write them all off, you know. It's crazy because a lot of people, I know Dak has a similar cause, and just a lot of us who are multi-parent man of the year candidates feel like they get the pulse of what's needed and act, step up and act and be more than just tweet, be more than just words, be more than shut up and go sack the quarterback, to do a little more than that. So I just wanted to start with that and highlight that. I think it was super dope, all your causes, but I think that was one that was close to me that we can kind of relate over and one that was really timely and really important.
Absolutely.
So tell me that you got this sack dance where you stack them up. What does that mean? Because every big time level. I watch you, you've been stacking them a lot lately. So tell me, what does that come from?
Man, big levels, bro. So my rookie year, man, I mean, now let's just be real. My rookie year, I had one sack. You feel me?
Yeah.
I'm 10 years later, year 11, I'm sitting at 107 sacks. We just do that math. I mean, it's a little under like whatever it is. It's a little over 90 years, not quite 10 a year. But you take that rookie year away, now we're sitting at, you know, 106 sacks over 10 years. Now we're talking about great numbers. But that's just the part of the journey. So my second year in the league, I'm starting getting some sacks. I'm starting to go a little crazy. I think I had like a three-piece against Mike Vick my second or third year in the league. So I'm high-key feeling myself. Like, bro, come on. You can't tell me there's not an athlete alive that didn't look up and want to be like Mike. Now, it wasn't Atlanta Mike Vick. It was, you know, it was at Philadelphia Mike Vick. But he still had $100 million contract.
Still moving, though.
Still going crazy. He had prime Deshaun Jackson. Like, you know, going super crazy. You had Shady McCoy. You know what I'm saying? Like, they're going crazy. Had the first three sack game of my career. My OGs at the time, you know, Roman Harper, John Vilma. I'm looking up to guys like Will Smith. Roman Harper's like, bro, you got to get a sack dance. That's one, lets the fans get behind you. Like, you got to get the people going. Like, you know, I think at the time he was doing the Uncle Bernie. He was out there shaking, breaking his back every play.
those are some old, they don't have vets like that anymore. You know, like, I guess me and you are the vets nowadays, but we don't have the full gray hair. We're not wearing the baggy suits. You know, no doubt. These vets, like Vince Wilfork, when I came to the league and I was on the Patriots, had Wilfork. We had some dude that literally was, his daughter was my age. He was that old, you know. So it was older vet. The league is younger. These are talking about some OG vets.
Super OGs. Party hard on Sunday, party hard after the win, party hard on Monday, may go crazy on Tuesday, you know. Start steaming it out Wednesday and be like, you know, now we eat too healthy. Now everybody's so like mentally conscious, mentally aware of what everything that's going on. But bro, so they came to me and was like, bro, you got to get you a dance that ain't going, like, the fans can get behind. And it ain't going to be like, it ain't going to consume a lot of energy. Cause what you don't want to do is be gassed for the next play. And Roman was like, bro, it's marketability. And I was like, I got to get something I can get behind. And, you know, I saw, what was it like, one outside linebacker from the Chicago Bears or Detroit, like do a kick in the air. I was like, that's clean. I could do that. Or one of these kicks, bro. And then he like popped his Achilles. I was like, that's not what you want. Right. So then I was just like, bro, I got it. Like, it just happened. One play, I like got a sack and started. I was like, rookie year I had, and now I'm going crazy. I'm just stacking. And I was like, there's levels, you know? And so it's been levels ever since. You feel me? So 11 years later, 107 sacks in, it's levels to this.
Now I see it. I've been watching the last couple games at the end of the year, and I saw you got a lot of them at the end. Finished strong, which all that matters.
You know,
And I saw you. I'm like, where did he get that from? Because I never really had one thing. And I've always, I know some dudes do, and I never had that one thing. DB, it's different. You get the pick, you know, it's
all you do. Everyone
just runs to the end zone. Everyone runs to the end zone and does a pose. I'm like, bro, we got to stop running to the end zone. I want to stop the run to the end zone and flick up. Like wave. I don't know.
You should do that. You should do that. Cause you know, my team was the first to do that. So
y'all have the most handshakes. I don't know who
gang.
Chauncey Gardner Johnson. I don't know who started it. Y'all be dapping. If someone makes a play, there's 90 handshakes going down.
Yeah, hey, Eric, squad deep, bro. We're gonna celebrate. I'm just glad, like, you know, DBs, I'm trying to just get them some wherewithal. Them boys get an interception, finish on the 30, them boys will run 70 yards to the opposite end zone. I'm like, nah, fam. I'm like, but let's just go to the closest end zone. That's what I'm working on. Like, we don't have to stop running to the end zone. Let's just run to the closest end zone. Or if we're in the middle of the field, let's run to the middle of the field logo. Like, you can't tell me the cameras don't follow.
No, I agree. Sometimes I'm like, bro, I just covered for about 8 seconds. I ran to you about 30. Now we're going to run back the opposite way, 70. I don't know, bro. I mean, I'm just sometimes in the back, you know, I'm like, I'm always thinking about the next play type guy. I'm going to think about the next play guy. So, I was like, bro, we got to get something else. You know, we had a couple, Tennessee, we came out with a little line, choreographed dance, that went kind of viral. I think you got to let people do something different, dance and stuff like that. But I think the group celebration is taken away from the game. The whole group.
Let it ride. Let it ride. What? If you got enough energy to do so, let it ride. I'm only in there for a turnover at the end of half. And in the game. Like, if I feel like it's about to be in the game, I'm right. Let's go.
How many snaps are you playing a game, though? Are you out there all 80? Or how many snaps
I'm trying to get 100% of them. At this point, now my coach is like, hey, I swear they got me on a play count. They'd be like, Cam, you got to relax. No, run me all of these. My boy, I'm here for 100% of practice reps. I'm here for 100% of game reps. I want all this. But I think I average like 85% now. I don't know. It's dropping. I used to be well above 90%. Now it's just like, I'm like, yo, what's up? What's the change? Like, bro, we're trying to prolong your career. Who?
Yeah.
I'm 11 years in. There is no such thing as prolonging. I'm living now. Like, if you said, Cam, what do you regret in your career? I don't know. Not putting in the offensive play to let me play the fullback dive so I can get a couple touchdowns. Because defensively, I lived my best life on every snap. I'm trying to choke out a tight end. I'm trying to get after a quarterback. It's whatever. I don't have regrets on the field.
And running off the field and on the field is a play in itself.
It's more tiring to run off the field and on the field than it's just stay in. Let me stay in.
For sure. For sure. That's why I like to play 100. I'm playing 100. I don't come off the field, you know. It's rhythm, it's groove. You don't even get tired when you're playing, honestly. When you get in your rhythm, it's not even, you know what it is. And I think, like what you said about taking a lot of practice reps, you know, I'm from, you know, the Giants and New England and stuff. It's not a lot of vet days. And I don't know how y'all do it, but I practice every day. And when they try to give me vet days, I'm like, I took one vet day in Tennessee and I was only like year 7 or 8.
During season?
Year 7. And he was like, hey, you know, you've been banged up. I've been playing through some injuries. Why don't you, we're giving some guys off. Why don't you just stay in? And I was like, all right, I'll get treatment. And the next day I thought I was terrible in practice. I'm like, I'm never doing this again. Like, I can't just go a day off. I get out of my rhythm, man. I feel like I got out of my groove.
No, I honestly, like during season you had a vet day? What's that? I don't know what that is. Up until this year, like literally the last like 5 weeks, they were like, yo, man, like they're like, hey, man, what happened? Oh, no, I came back from COVID. So I came back from COVID on a Thursday. Right. So I missed a day. Like I thought I'd be back Wednesday, but I had a negative or whatever it is for 10 days maxed out. I'm back on Thursday. So I had the Thursday game. Or Thursday, whatever. So then we had the game on Sunday and I went crazy. You know what I'm saying? I went animal, like stupid ballistic, like, bro, this was my first time missing a game since my sophomore year of college. You feel me? Like, so I'm over here on like a different hunger pace than everybody else. I'm like, bro, like I just watched you guys play the Jets. Like, you know how bad I wanted to play the Jets. Like some teams you like, damn, that's a max team. I'm playing the Jets. Like,
yeah, that's a big game. That's a big game for you.
Like, you know you're eating that game. So I didn't get to play that. I'm just at home with my kids, eating bean dip. We're all asymptomatic, bored. And like, I'm like, bro, I should be playing right now. I'm sick. So I get back on a Thursday. We play Sunday. I go for like 2 sacks, whatever it is, right? I think we played the Monday, maybe played the Dolphins, whatever it was. 2 sacks. So they're like, yo, that worked. Hey, Wednesday comes around. Hey, Cam, after Indy, go inside. I was like, what you talking about? He's like, no, you're done. I was like, no, I was like, what are you talking about? It's not up for discussion. All right, bet. I'm gonna let this shit ride because we just balled out and I'm still a little sore. Bro, again, I think we played Tampa. We smacked Tampa. And when I say smack Tampa.
No, y'all play Tampa well.
Bro, 9-0? Like 9-0.
Yeah, no, that's tough. That's tough.
I'll say their wide receiver core is probably second to nobody. The Rams maybe might have a wide receiver core that could probably compete. But Mike Evans, Antonio Brown, Chris Godwin.
Yeah.
It's tough. You got Leonard Fournette playing some of his best ball. You got Tom Brady out there chucking that thing. Mm-hmm. Whatever it is, 9-0. Bro, the next week comes around, another vet day on Wednesday. I'm like, yo, y'all say, yo, chill.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, like I'm like, hey, bro, like I enjoy practice too much not to be a part of it. So I fully understand, but it finally happened this year. Year 11, I got like Wednesday vet day. The last four games, it was weird. But also,
I mean, we gotta all, you know, take into account how weird this whole COVID stuff was, though, you know? Like, just playing, obviously, we know. Like, I'm like a player who missed two games because of COVID. And in the CDC, I was someone in my family had it, and I was sick, reported close contact, and I was testing. Tuesday tested, negative. Wednesday tested, like twice a day. Thursday tested. Friday, I pop. I'm asymptomatic. We go to Tampa on Sunday. The whole game is going to be about how, you know, Logan Ryan's matched up against Tom Brady, his former teammate, and blah, 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 blah. Played him in the playoffs and the secondary versus them. And I'm watching, like, you said you want to play the Jets, and I get that, but I wanted to play Tom Brady. Like, that's the ultimate chess match. You know what I'm saying? That's who, for the DB, you're competitive, you're safety, disguise coverage. Like, can I trick them? Can I get the ball off them? If I get Tom Brady ball, like, that's going crazy.
Right.
So I missed that game. And then I come back and pretty much didn't get out till Sunday of the game. I try to play. Oh, you got to ramp up. What do you mean? Got to ramp up. Oh, you got to ramp up in 10 days. CDC changes everything 2 weeks later to 5 days. I'm like, I'm the only player in the league to miss two games for the COVID. And I have not missed a game in years, man. I probably missed less than five games my entire career. So that had me hot, but that's just how weird it's been. And I really feel like my team needed me those games for rhythm and just what I mean to my team and where our team's at that point. That was tough, man. I was on the trampoline bouncing with my kids for conditioning, and it was freezing out. And I was like, nah, I got to get this conditioning in. And I'm bouncing on the trampoline. All my family has COVID. We're all chilling. Not too bad, but man, I was like, they're like, you haven't been working out. I said, I'm on the trampoline. You ever bounce on the trampoline for an hour? That's hard to play the game. I say, what player? Go get me a player on our team to bounce on trampoline for an hour. So I was doing whatever I could, man. I was doing whatever I could. I hated missing those games. That was tough, especially when you feel like you could be out there. But obviously, COVID's a new thing we're all dealing with. It was just crazy. So you talked about it, about, you know, why you came up with the celebration and stuff. You seem like, you know, your brand is, for a defensive player, we know we don't get as much exposure as offensive players. Not fantasy for us. And you're one of the more marketable defensive players. Was that a point of your career where you kind of thought about marketing and your brand? Not even marketing, your brand, like your legacy. And when does that come in your mind? You know, when it comes to just, I want to come in the league and make plays to, I want to build a brand with this.
Man, I don't think I've ever thought about building a brand with this. I honestly just been enjoying the entire ride. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
I had a dad who played for the Minnesota Vikings for 13 years, six-time Pro Bowler. You know, there's a lot of stuff growing up. You're like, man, that's a pretty big shadow. You know what I'm saying? Like, you Steve Jordan's son. Like, you know what I'm saying? Even at the Senior Bowl, you feel me? Like college, all that. They're like, oh man, you Steve Jordan's son, man. I remember when playing your pops. I remember this. It's like you also take pride in it. Like, bro, like my dad's legacy was he was a hard ass worker. You feel me? Like, He won the Ironman, you know, the Ironman from all their old school conditioning tests. He was everything that you wanted to be, a consummated pro. It's like, bro, like, it's not about living up to that. It's about being proud of it. So my pride is my legacy. You feel me? Like, my pride is supreme when I'm over here. Like, bro, like, I'm playing to, like, not the coach's standard. I'm playing to my standards. I've got things that I want to accomplish in this world. And so I let on-field talk always talk for itself. I started off, you know, they wanted me to play a three technique. They really drafted me to stop the run. They drafted me as a 4-eye. You feel me? Like, yeah. I worked my way off to the edge. and was like, this is one, it's way easier on the joints to not have to hold up a guard and a tackle versus a tackle and a tight end who may, a heavy tight end may weigh, what, 250 these days?
Yeah,
there ain't no more, there ain't no more Craig Stevens anymore. There ain't no, like, true blocking tight end. So I'd rather, you know, we get out to the edge. We set in that thing. We play whatever it is, but we set the tone. So it's just, it comes second nature. It's like, bro, like, if I play the run, then we can really get after the passer. And my coach that came in, my D-line coach, Ryan Nielsen, came in and was like, you know, stop the run, have some fun. And I was like, well, that's been my mantra of life, my boy. Like, I'm here for that. So when it comes down to it, I'm playing to my standard. I'm playing for everything that my pride stands on. I'm here for all this. Like, I try to tell the teammates, bro, like, I bring hands to work every day. The Lord blessed me with hands, so I got to bless somebody else with these. You feel me? So I'm here for all that. So when it comes to like, where does it come from? It's just a set standard.
Nah, it's the tone. It's the tone says passion. You live for it. Like, all the best teams I've been on, when you talk about your team, all the best teams I've been on in my Patriot days, when we had Wilfork, Mayo, McCourty, even last year on the Giants when we had Dalvin Tomlinson and we had Blake Martinez and myself. When you have, like, when you tell me about you and Double D, DeMario, and Malcolm Jenkins you brought in, that's leadership, like true rare leadership at all three levels. And I felt like at D-line a lot of times, because y'all are violent individuals who go after it, you don't always get your best leaders in that position group. Don't technically have captains all the time for that position group, but y'all team does. So tell me about when you're playing, you know, you got Malcolm join the team, you had DeMario come and have the best years in his career with y'all, like, feeding off each other, all three levels kind of setting the tone, because it's different. The front is different than what the backs have to do. The backs have to be part of the front seven and the back seven. The back seven is different than the front, but the safety has to get down there sometimes. So it's almost like two lines of defense out there in the game. So tell me, what playing with just those two key vets, what that means, you know, to you and your game and your team and the kind of what y'all bring.
Man, at that linebacker core, I haven't seen a leader like DeMario Davis since John Vilma. You know, like, just like a true leader that has everybody's ear, like, that can fire people up, that can challenge people, and know the back end to the front end. You know, like, if you like, hey, Cam, you know, you got this, you got these over routes coming, you got these slant routes. I'm like, I may understand out of Dragons, you know, sevens, digs, ends, I may understand three different route concepts in there. I got nothing for you after that. But, you know, you talk to a linebacker, he understands all the X's and O's. So he's able to communicate from top to bottom. I'm over here, like, I'm working off of energy vibes. I'm working off of pure, hey, bro, we need to lock him down. I need you. If we're going to press, we're going to press. We're going to cloud. Whatever it is. But that's about all my verbiage is going to give you. Then you got, you know, Jenks, who's a safety, but you know, he comes down to play linebacker and plays. At this point, you know, the strong safety is just an outside linebacker to me.
Sure.
So yeah. For that, like, I'm talking to them and they talking to everybody else. You know, it's like I'm giving up energy. They're giving out commands and actions. I'm handling my D-line. They're handling each respective. It's not like you have to really look back and be like, man, this is where you need to be. Everybody's there already.
Yeah.
And the fact of it is like, you know, we were more of a vet team this year. It's like, you had guys who've been playing together for 4 years. Our defense, like, you saw the strength of our defense really come on because it's guys like Marcus Williams, Marshawn Lattimore, everybody been there 4 years. Mark has been there, what, this is his fifth year. You talk about, right. Malcolm Jenkins been there 2 or 3 years now. DeMario been there 5 years now. Like, everybody's gelled up together because we know exactly what we can and what we can't do. You know, you look across the D-line, it's still Marcus Davenport and it's David Onyemata. It's guys who've been playing together. I don't think we had one new starter other than Adebo. You know, you had Chauncey Gardner-Johnson into his third year with P.J. Williams behind him. Everybody's been playing together. When you know what everybody can do, like, I know exactly where he's going to be. I know he knows exactly where I'm going to be. And that certain level of trust is there. When that trust is there, you know, that's everything. Like, bro, I don't have to do anything more than my job. And I do my job damn well.
The accountability is there too. You're practicing every day. So-and-so's practicing. You're pushing the energy. And when they see you out there pushing energy, like, I run on the field, I'm the first to touch the ball every rep, every day. Every day I'm out there and the first on the field. In the game, I'm running. As soon as the kickoff goes through the thing, I'm running to get to the hash first to set the field for my team, taking the field first. And when you have multiple guys like that, accountability guys, energy guys, guys in charge of that, and a vet group, I don't know how y'all kept together so long. It don't last that long. I don't know how y'all were able to keep together for so long.
Drafted well.
I'm happy y'all do, but that's drafted tough. Well. Everyone played together 5 years. I don't know how you do that. things get broken up.
It's not going to last long. It's not going to. We'll see what happens this offseason.
So tell me about, obviously, you know, what Drew Brees meant to you and New Orleans and his being gone. But what did you learn from him? Because I pick up so many stories, and I just pick up, like, I'm going to pick up some from you in this interview and be like, all right, like, that's the beauty of hosting this. I get to talk to successful people, high energy people, great leaders, great people in the community. And I get free game. I get to host a podcast, but I get free life lessons, and the viewers get it too. So what did you learn from a Drew Brees? I heard he stands in the cold tub up to his neck every morning. Like, there's myths out there about him. Like, Kenny Vaccaro told me Drew Brees goes in the cold tub for 20 minutes or something. Like, Friday. And that's why Kenny Vaccaro stands in the cold tub every Friday for like 20 minutes. I'm like, bro, that's way too long. But I got it from Drew Brees. I'm like, oh, I got to work then.
Look, I wouldn't know. I don't touch the cold tub. There's a mythology about this cold tub, talking about it helps you recover. It helps you cool down during training camp if it gets to that tough and you got to get in there. But I guess, but I don't get in no cold tub. I wouldn't know. I'm avoiding the cold tub at all costs.
I don't get worried about the cold tub.
I don't do anything under 75, 75 degrees. It's not for me. I look at them and they're true warriors, because that's things I won't do. It better be playoffs if I'm playing in the cold. Like, what we on? Like, this better mean more than something. It better mean everything. When you talk about what I learned from Drew Brees, I mean, I would say his meticulous methodology of like approaching anything. For 11 years, right? I watched him go from retired last year, was he 41, 42? So from 30, let's call it 30 to 41. Right. You would say the back half of a man's career, like when he gets older, when he gets allegedly more tired. I never saw a drop off in the way he approached his workouts, in the way he approached his conditioning, in the way he approached his warmups. Everything was set. But when I tell you a model of consistency, wake up, whatever it was, I know if I come into the building for rehab, before rehab, whatever it is, Drew's already there. I know that he's breaking the film. I know that on Fridays, that's where he gets his dry needling or whatever he does with. It's like I be on, you know, rehab from PT. Drew walks in. I'm like, it's Friday. That's my bad. This is his table. This is what he's doing. Like, I already know. I'm like, I made a joke of it at that point. It's like, and Drew's here. I got to go. No, Ken, we got you. No, you don't. Like, let's keep it a buck. Let's be G real. It's his table now. Goodbye. You know what I'm saying? Right, like, right on schedule. I knew exactly. I try and get in right before.
Every trainer in the league got their favorite players, though. We all know certain guys test certain guys. And normally when the quarterback walks in, you know you're on the clock. Now when Drew Brees walks in, that's immediate. That's, you know, exit.
You know, if you're getting whatever work you're getting from Wes, our head trainer at the time, or Wes, Bo, our head trainer. I went all the way back to college with that one. You knew he was headed towards Drew by Friday. That was his day. That as soon as he walked in, he, you know, and then Drew's so gracious, he'd be like, hey, Bodacious, you know, 5 minutes. It's not 5 minutes. It's right now. He's just letting you know that he's here. But all right. But bro, it's that meticulous, like, just methodology of going to work, of everything set. Everything is going to be done the right way. Everything, even if he's not even practicing, he's still out at practice. You know what I'm saying? Like, he's making all of his shadow throws. He's got the Dak. He got the Dak Prescott hip flipping. You know, so he's pointing where exactly he was going. He's over like in mental reps. You could tell if he's having a good mental rep or a bad mental rep. Like, you can hear it. Like, he'd be like, you know, but like, you're sitting there like, if you don't know Drew, bro, like, you're over here watching, just like, what is he on? Like, what who he talking to?
You know, Patriots, Saints, we're joint practicing y'all in the Greenbrier every year or something, and we're going to the walkthrough day, the third day, and we're out there in flip-flops and sweats.
Y'all was on that BS. I've never seen anything like that before. Y'all came out in flip-flops. I was nervous for y'all. I appreciate doing the crossover with the Patriots because you guys were a slow tempo for us. I said, like what they do.
Yeah, y'all practice that tempo out the huddle as a walkthrough. And then y'all had Brandon Cooks, and I'm covering Brandon Cooks. And I noticed all week Drew threw the ball, and he would go through all his other reads and literally move his shoulder and fake throw the ball to each one of his reads. I'm on Brandon Cooks. He run a fade. Y'all hand the ball off, and he go to, you know, I'm a DB. I'm playing the hands. He put the hands up. The ball doesn't come to him. Every play, Brandon Cooks is visualizing catching the ball, and it's freaking me out because he's not getting the ball. And now I don't know when he's actually going to get it or not. So I'm on edge, like jabbing, like, did I just miss a pick? And like the ball is completely thrown out of the way. But watching Drew and watching him practice, that was the weirdest thing I ever seen. I'm like, bro, are they literally like this? This is too corny. They can't do this every play. And they literally did it every play. And I'm like, that's what makes Drew Brees great. After every throw, he goes through every other progression after that. And that was just crazy to see. I've never seen anything like it.
Unreal. Unreal. I probably won't ever see anything like it, bro. Like, it's just who he is, bro. Like, and I'm telling you, like I said, conditioning. Let's say, like, conditioning test. Drew is still probably one of the best conditioned athletes in the game, bro. Like, he's proficient at almost everything. Like, when I say, like, oh, if you go bowling, Drew's probably bowling a buck 80. If you go in golfing, he's dropping, you know, under 80. He's like, he's good at everything.
He probably goes home and practices it 1,000 times too. You know, like, he probably go home like, all right, I bowled 180 today. Watch what I do next time.
No, watch. I didn't like, he's probably doing shadow reps right now. Like,
yeah. No, man. I mean, I think this has been great insight. And, you know, so we talked about, you know, legacies every day. Do you have a date? Or not a date, but do you have an idea of how much longer you want to play? How does the end game work for you? You get to a point where you achieve a lot of things. I'm sure you're living in the now, just enjoying the now. But what do you look at you have a great family and you balance that. What do you say? Like, all right, man, I'm good. I'm going to do it till I enjoy it. Or what is your target year in mind? How does that work? How's your end game work?
I think I told myself I'd get to year 10 and reassess. The way I felt after last year, I was like, bro, I feel like I'm so irritated that we've been so close this last 4 years. I was like, how can I retire? So I didn't even entertain the idea. This year, I'm like, bro, like, year 11, I feel great. Like, in fact, yeah. I feel better this year than I did the last 2 years. You know, like, there's always going to be nicks, bruises, or whatever. But it's like, I was like, all right, well, I'm going to year 15 right now. Like, I was like, all right, I'll recheck in at year 15. And I may get to 14 and be like, all right, it's time to recheck in. But I'm at least 3 years out from even rechecking back in. in terms of health, I'm not even gauging me. I'm like, all right, well, where can we get better as a D-line? I was like, yeah, I'm already playing. Like, Marcus is elevating his gameplay. Got a fifth year left with him. I was like, David Onyemata is out here elevating his gameplay, but they keep trying to throw us in a 3-4. If we draft another D tackle, I said, then they have to play a 4-3. Then I'm really eating. You know, like, I'm not even worried about me. I'm worried about what we can do for the defense. So until I lose love for this game, until I start focusing on, like, damn, I wonder if my back is going to hold out, or I wonder if my shoulder is going to hold out, or if this is aching me, can I play another year? Bro, I feel good.
Like, did anything change from 9 and 10 training-wise? Did you do anything different? Because I am year 9, and I feel pretty good. You know what right. I'm saying? But I don't know how I feel in 11. We'll see. But is there anything? But I'm always looking to change my off seasons. I'm going to run more. I'm going to do less that. I'm not going to load my back at all. You know, I'm always trying to adapt. I'm always about adapting, bro. Living and being willing to change if need be.
I'll probably put a bar on this back maybe twice a year off some just like pride type stuff. I'm big pitch shark. We sumo squatting this out, my boy. Like, ain't no bar touching his back. And that's probably been since like year 4 or 5. But when I think about what's changed, probably like everybody in the league has that availability of like an Alcats, right? Everybody does that food sensitivity stuff. I was like, this can't be it. Like, this, like, everybody gets this. Everybody down there has the same stuff that's like, oh, this is irritable, this is whatever. So yeah. I did some research. I did like real blood work. You know what I'm saying? Like, cost a low-key bag to figure out every food that's good for me. And it's not just like what's irritable, whatever. It's like down to the blood cell of what helps your blood flow, what helps your blood push, what helps whatever. And just that knowledge alone, I can't be honest with you and be like, I follow this strictly because I like a good cheeseburger every now and again. Like, yeah. I'm gonna eat this wonderful truffle mash when it comes. Like, I can't stop myself from being legendary when it comes to food. I'm a fat kid. Like, I'm a fat kid at heart. Like, I'm a fat kid as I am. Like, I love great food. I'm a foodie. But it does at least open up your mind to, it's like eating to like live versus eating to just eat. It's a different mentality. So I'm sort of like on this in season eat to live. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, eat to live to the best of my potential and abilities. I thugged it out my first 10 years. And I was like, you know what? After talking to guys like Bruce Smith, you know, after talking to guys like Michael Strahan, talking to John Randles, you know, like legends, you're like, bro, what changed? They're always like, hey, man, I started dropping a little bit weight. every year. And I was like, well, this body probably ain't gonna drop no weight, my boy, but we can go at least feel a little bit better. And so I got the blood work done. And like I said, sort of tightened up the diet, but I'm my own cook anyways.
Bro, it's crazy because people get fixated on the secret. Like, what's this book, this, that. And everyone has their own process and is really just enjoying themselves and figure out what works for them. And I live in Tampa. In the off season, I spoke to Rondé Barber a lot. And I was like, played 16 years, never missed a game. And to me, that's like,
legend.
That's legacy. That's legend. I'm saying never missed a game. You're 190-pound tackling linebacker, star, corner, safety.
Right.
You never miss a game. And you're a Hall of Famer and all that stuff. And you're throwing your body around. And I'm like, bro, what's the key? Like, whatever you do, tell me. And he's like, man, I just eat, relatively healthy. But he's like, honestly, he's like, I looked at the facility. He's like, but I got up and I would run. He's like, I'll run, like, knock a mile out. But he's like, I would run. He's like, it's conditioning. Conditioning is the key to durability. I always made sure if I was in shape. And if I felt like I wasn't in shape, I'll run a little more after practice. It was like that simple. And I'm like, that's it. Just like run a little more after practice if I feel like I'm out of shape. And he was like, yeah, don't overthink it. But I always took from that, like, conditioning. All right, if I'm going to do anything in this offseason, I'm going to make sure I'm in shape. I'm going to make sure I'm moving. Because, you want to sit around for 3 weeks and drink a little, be a sommelier. I'm trying to be a sommelier this year, drink my little red wines. And I'm a foodie as well. Go to Disney World with the kids, eat around the world and all that stuff. And
got to go to
gotta get away. You kind of just want to get away and be on the couch. And that's cool. But for a DB, when them legs stop working, I don't care how smart you are, you ain't got no shot. So you got to keep them legs moving. So, hey, can you hoop though? Because your wife, Scarlett Knight, she can hoop.
She hooped in Jersey. There ain't no, that's she not real hoop, basketball. Look,
she's a general. Tell her I said what's up. She's a general.
Will do. Hooper, bro. That's all I'm saying. She went to
school.
She went
Stringer, man.
It's rare for like actual athletes to come out of Rutgers. You feel me? Like it's probably you, her.
Nah, come on now. Your year, we was putting them out. McCourty twins, all them. Come on now.
Man, so Fabio.
Them out. Fabio. Like, I mean, I played with Shane Cowell, right? I played with Shane Green.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, man. I mean, you got a couple.
That's my dog. we got the most Pro Bowlers going to the Pro Bowl this year out of a school. But I mean, like, whatever.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it is what it is. Go Bears at all times. But no, I mean, like, honestly, let me ask you this, because you might be the first person that actually enjoyed. Did you enjoy your time at Rutgers?
Ooh.
That's what I get. Hey, that's what I get from every Rutgers person. But I've never been like, ask me if I enjoy Cal. Come on, try it.
I mean, what do you?
I try to stay in 50 years.
What? Listen, I played for Shiano, and Shiano was just really like tough. Like it was a tough experience.
Through the times of all, like my 11 years in the league, I have never once ran into anybody from Rutgers that was like, "Bro, you enjoy Rutgers?" It has always started off with the, "I mean, I've never once, bro. Like you asked me, like, bro, did you enjoy Cal? I could have left after my third year. I didn't think about it. I'm coming back." Like, I was so excited. Like, I'm playing football. I'm enjoying Cal. Like, I love Go Bears. I walk around Go Bears. Like, and I get that. Being with the Scarlet Knight, being married to somebody from Rutgers, I've never met anybody that would be like, man, if I had a 50 year, I would have stayed. But I asked them for a 50 year eligibility. I was like, yo, I don't really need to go. Like, I'm cool right here. No? All right. I'm out to the league then. I guess I'll go.
No, I appreciate you, dog. I definitely gotta get you in line and we just link. I'm sure you'll be out at the Super Bowl, right?
Yeah. You know, I'll be working.
I'll see you on the route.
No doubt, man. Hey, stay blessed, my guy.
Hey, I appreciate you.
Thanks for joining us on the NFL Players Podcast. Don't forget to subscribe and follow at NFL Players Podcast on Instagram for the latest player stories and to connect with the NFL Players community.